Today is Wednesday, July 21st, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. seeks to denuclearize North Korea with regional allies.
The United States has made it clear that we are ready to engage with North Korea. They know that. We hope they respond positively.
Plus, Iraqi Prime Minister fires security officials over an attack that killed 34 people.
Attacks on markets targeting civilians are all too common in Iraq before major religious holidays like Eid al-Adha.
Also, UN warns against the misuse of spyware to hack phones of rights activists and journalists. Our top story today is in Asia. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman told reporters on Wednesday the United States, Japan, and South Korea are sending a clear message with their coordination of policy towards North Korea, despite some recent friction between the two Asian allies. Japan's Vice Foreign Minister Takeo Mori said the trilateral cooperation with the United States was crucial for ending North Korea's nuclear weapons program. North Korea has rebuffed U.S. diplomatic initiatives since U.S. President Joe Biden took over from Donald Trump, who had three summits with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Those meetings raised hopes of some sort of breakthrough, but little progress came as Kim refused to give up his nuclear weapons, although he did impose a freeze on testing them. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman.
That close coordination sends a very critical message to North Korea in that we are together and shoulder to shoulder in our approach to this policy. The United States has made it clear that we are ready to engage with North Korea. They know that. We hope they respond positively. But as my colleagues have said, we must exercise some patience, perhaps not too much, but some. The United States has been and will continue to explore opportunities to engage PRC officials, including at senior levels, as part of our effort to advance U.S. interests and responsibly manage this relationship.
Thus, U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman. 20 years after freeing Afghanistan from the grip of the Taliban, U.S. and NATO troops are leaving. For a generation of Afghans who grew up during that time, the future is worrisome. VOA's Arash Rabasadi explains.
Recently, on the streets of Kandahar, a Humvee carrying Afghan special forces came under attack from Taliban fighters. The next day, the Taliban reportedly raised their signature white flag over a key border crossing with Pakistan. This video comes from a Taliban spokesman, and VOA cannot independently verify its content, but it claims to show an unnamed Taliban fighter at the border pledging the group's commitment to safeguarding Afghan security forces and local businesses. But many Afghans see the Taliban as a threat to their way of life. Medina Sadat is a civil rights activist and mother of two. She lives in Kabul and says the mood in Afghanistan is changing.
When the U.S. and NATO and European countries got involved in Afghanistan, people started to live normal lives. But when foreign agencies decided to leave Afghanistan, a fear spread, especially among women. We are worried about what will happen to us and what will happen to our family members in the future.
Meanwhile, from his shop in Kabul, Murtaza, who has only been in business for a year, has his own concerns as a small business owner.
We want a better future, a future without war, without coronavirus, and without steep prices, because we all want a peaceful life.
He adds that uncertainty for his business rises as the Taliban's footprint grows.
I must say I'm very worried. Maybe many problems will multiply, and maybe I won't be able to support my family. Our biggest fear is that if the Taliban enter Kabul, it will create massive fear and terror in people's minds and drive them away from their homes.
Murtaza says the international community should do more to pressure the Taliban into joining a peace process with the Afghan government. Medina Sadat doesn't see that happening.
Taliban are the same as they were 20 years ago. The ideology is the same as before. Life under Taliban rule is like you are in a cage, especially for women. Like mothers around the world, I want the best life for my kids, a better and bright future. But I don't see that for kids with the Taliban's comeback. I worry their basic rights will be violated. I am fearful for my son, but even more worried about my daughter.
The Biden administration pledged ongoing financial support for the Afghan government, but those living increasingly close to the violence with memories of life under Taliban rule are concerned that pledge may not be enough. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa Kadhimi has fired security officials after 34 people were killed and over 50 wounded in an explosion Monday night, Iraqi media report. Islamic State militants claim responsibility for the attack, which Iraqi security officials say was carried out by a suicide bomber. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
A crowd of mostly women shoppers ran for cover amid screaming and yelling following an explosion Monday night at a crowded clothing market in Baghdad's mostly Shiite Sadr city. It was the third such attack in Iraq this year. Another attack in Sadr city in January left around 30 dead. A group of young men dressed in black loaded coffins onto vehicles in preparation for burial Tuesday morning. A middle-aged woman dressed in black bewailed some of the young victims of the explosion. A young man with a yellow cap complained on social media that attacks on markets targeting civilians are all too common in Iraq before major religious holidays like Eid al-Adha, which began Tuesday. He says that this kind of thing always happens to us before elections and before the Eids. Most of the victims, he points out, were women and children. Iraqi TV's correspondent in Sadr city reported that the explosive vest worn by the suicide bomber contained nails and ball bearings to increase the number of victims, according to eyewitnesses. Prime Minister Mustafa Kazemi fired security officials responsible for the area in Sadr city where Monday's explosion took place. Hours before the blast, Kazemi said in an interview he hoped Muqtada Sadr, a top Shiite political leader, many of whose followers live in Sadr city, would reverse his decision not to participate in the upcoming October parliamentary elections. He says that we must encourage Muqtada Sadr to reverse his decision not to participate in the elections. Other political forces were trying to make his group pay for its mistakes, but everyone in Iraq, he insists, must be held responsible for his mistakes. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that internal political tensions between Prime Minister Kazemi and various political groups could be behind the recent activities of Islamic State. He questions whether under the banner of Islamic State there aren't in reality various Iraqi political forces that are battling Kazemi, given that the centralized Islamic State group in its former incarnation no longer exists. Abu Diab also points out that Kazemi's destitution of top security officials following the explosion indicates internal tensions within those forces, with some of those officials loyal to other political leaders. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Iraqi government declared victory in its war against the so-called Islamic State group at the end of 2017. However, the terrorist group is still able to launch attacks in Baghdad. Edmond Gureb, professor of Middle East history at American University in Washington, explained why that is still possible to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Basically, what we have seen is that while ISIS has lost control of territories, they have lost many of their fighters, both because of the activities of the international coalition in Iraq, the Iraqi forces, the counter-terrorism force, as well as popular militias on the ground in Iraq and Syria. And also you had the army and U.S. forces played a role in weakening ISIS. Nevertheless, what we have seen, while ISIS has lost a lot of territory and they lost many of their leaders, they have not lost apparently their ideological commitments. Their perception of their role. There may have been changes, for example, in their strategy and their tactics. In the beginning, they wanted to control territory. They controlled huge areas between Iraq and Syria. And their belief is that they were creating a new state at that time. After these blows against them and their losses, they have changed their tactics, but they wanted to fight for their beliefs. And they have also expanded in some areas. While they have retreated in some places, They have expanded in others in other parts of the region or in Africa and even in Afghanistan. Recently, apparently, they have been much more active in Syria and in Iraq. The situation on the ground, the fact that both countries are going through difficult periods, many challenges, it makes it easier for ISIS to reorganize and try to play a much larger role. In addition, I think there's also the factor that you have a guerrilla, an individual, a small number of people can still infiltrate and attack, even if you have good security. And unfortunately, in many of these areas, you still don't have the kind of security that you need. Still, you have the ability of small groups to operate and bring about devastating attacks like the one we saw recently in Sadr City.
A U.S. drone attack targeted a truck of an Iran-backed militia in eastern Syria on Sunday. The attack came amid increasing tensions in the region between the U.S. military and the Iran-backed Iraqi militias in recent weeks, who used drones and rockets to hit bases housing U.S. troops. What are they hoping to achieve?
Many of these militias, or several of them at least, are allied with Iran. They used to be, and still to a certain extent, although Iran has reduced some aid, some of these see themselves also not simply just as Iranian proxies. Some of them, especially when they lose fighters to U.S. forces or to Iraqi counterterrorism force, there have been loud voices within these organizations demanding a response. The strikes, which were aimed at creating a deterrence from attacks, have not succeeded, apparently. Nevertheless, we have seen two things. On the one hand, some of the leaders of some of these organizations, Hezbollah or some of the others, they have said that they are responding to attacks and to their losses of their members. And of course, there's also the other factor that Iraq, as we all know, has become an arena for the conflict between a proxy war between U.S. and its allies and supporters and Iran and its allies and its supporters. And this is the unfortunate thing that Iraq faces today. The Iranians are in negotiations with 4+1 with the United States to go back the nuclear agreement with Iran, and they do not want an escalation. One of the major leaders of the Revolutionary Guard of Iran has gone to Iraq. They asked for a calming to avoid a larger attack or attacks that are going to lead to the death of American soldiers, because these are seen as perhaps red lines by the United States government.
That's Edmund Gareb, professor of Middle East History at American University in Washington, speaking with my colleague Mohammed Elshenawi. Mass flooding has left terrifying scenes in China's central Hunan province, where at least a dozen were killed when their subway line flooded. Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
Large swathes of China's central Hunan province were underwater on Wednesday, following days of torrential rain. In the capital, Zhongzhou, at least 12 people were killed when a subway line was flooded. Video showed commuters chest-deep in murky floodwaters and an underground station turned into a large churning pool. More than 500 people were pulled to safety. This man was one of them.
The flood was so strong and many people were carried away by that. The remaining few of us, including a kid, were so tired and we nearly gave up. We kept holding on tight to the railing. That's why you can see many bruises on my arms. These are all the bruises. This is one too. This included too. If you don't hold on tight to the railing, it's very easy to be washed away.
The flooding has inundated much of the city and the surrounding area. Hunan is a major logistics hub in central China and has a population of around 100 million. Since the weekend, millions of lives there have been upended as trains have been suspended, highways closed, and flights delayed or cancelled. Residents caught in the flood have taken shelter in libraries, cinemas, and museums. Schools and hospitals have also been cut off by waterlogging. One hospital in the provincial capital has lost all power and is racing to find transport to relocate about 600 critically ill patients. The unusually active rainy season has led to the rapid rise of a number of rivers in the vast Yellow River Basin. Dozens of reservoirs and dams have breached warning levels, prompting about 100,000 people to be evacuated to safe zones. Weather watchers say it's the heaviest rain the province has seen in 1,000 years.
That's Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. Hong Kong police arrested a former executive editor-in-chief of the closed pro-democracy Apple Daily newspaper on Wednesday, the latest arrest in a national security investigation of media tycoon Jimmy Lai's newspaper. Ryan Wood of Reuters reports.
Police in Hong Kong arrested another top staffer at the now-closed pro-democracy tabloid Apple Daily on Wednesday. Local media say its former executive editor-in-chief Lam Mung Chung was taken in by the city's National Security Police. Lam makes eight arrests tied to the newspaper, including founder Jimmy Lai. In a statement, police said that they arrested a 51-year-old former newspaper editor on suspicion of, quote, conspiring to collude with foreign countries or foreign forces to endanger national security. Next Digital, which published Apple Daily, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The popular tabloid folded after several hundred police raided its headquarters last month and froze the company's assets and bank accounts. Its last print edition was published 1 week after. Police have said dozens of the paper's articles may have violated the city's Beijing-imposed national security law, the first instance authorities have leveraged the legislation against local media. Critics of the law say it's been used to muzzle dissent and erode freedoms, but authorities have denied those claims, saying enforcement protects national security.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Tense post-Brexit relations between Britain and the European Union are facing further strain. The UK will on Wednesday call for major changes to trade rules agreed on by both sides. Brexit Minister David Frost will set up proposals for smoothening out trade arrangements for Northern Ireland, which is the only part of the UK that has a land border with the 27-nation bloc. Pfizer says a South African firm will begin producing the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. The announcement Wednesday is important because it would be the first time that a vaccine will be produced in Africa. The BioNTech Institute in Cape Town will manufacture the vaccine for distribution across Africa. BioVac will receive large batch ingredients for the vaccine from Europe and will blend the components, put them in vials, and package them for distribution. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The U.S. Agency for Global Media is outraged by reports that more than 180 journalists, including from the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, appear to have been targets of sophisticated military-grade spyware. Quote, targeting journalists' private conversations in any way is unconscionable, unquote, said U.S. AGM acting CEO Kelu Chow. Quote, this abuse must stop and reporters' security must be protected, unquote. An investigation by a consortium of media outlets found that spyware designed for governments to track terrorists was used to try to hack into smartphones belonging to journalists, human rights activists, business executives, and government officials, including French President Emmanuel Macron. The spyware tool called Pegasus was developed by the Israeli company NSO Group. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has issued a warning about the misuse of surveillance technology in the wake of reports spyware was used to hack smartphones of human rights activists, business executives, and journalists. Michelle Bachelet says illegitimate use of the tools could undermine people's human rights and subvert democratic societies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
It is not yet clear to what extent the Pegasus spyware sold by the Israeli firm NSO Group has been used to spy on journalists, human rights defenders, opposition politicians, and others. But Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet finds revelations that the telephones of some 50,000 people were hacked into extremely alarming. The High Commissioner's spokesman, Rupert Colville, calls the emerging information hugely disturbing and notes it may just be the tip of the iceberg. He tells VOA the people whose phones were hacked are not Islamic State terrorists or criminals. He says they are journalists, human rights activists, and others engaged in legitimate activities.
It's very scary. The potential is very severe, and I think a wake-up call to everyone that we need to do something about this. We need to find some way of controlling this, of putting this genie back into the bottle, because it's potentially hugely intrusive and hugely dangerous in some cases for many of us.
In a statement, High Commissioner Bachelet expresses her misgivings about the use of these deeply intrusive surveillance tools. She says they can only be justified in cases of investigations in serious crimes and grave security threats. She notes if the recent allegations about the use of Pegasus are even partly true, then that red line has been crossed again and again with total impunity. Spokesman Colville says the surveillance tools reportedly have been used to arrest, intimidate, and even kill journalists and human rights defenders. He says the potential for abuse of this software is huge and very dangerous.
You can get people who are simply spying on any politician, on any kind of opposition whatsoever, in order to stay in power. And that, of course, is perhaps the most alarming thing overall. This can be used to subvert democracy, to subvert all sorts of human rights, freedom of expression, freedom of opinion, right to privacy, and in extreme cases, right to life.
Bachelet says companies that develop and distribute surveillance technologies are responsible for avoiding harm to human rights. She says they must take immediate steps to mitigate and remedy the harms caused by their products. She says states need to enact laws to make companies legally accountable for the illegitimate usage of their technology. She adds states urgently need to better regulate the sale, transfer, and use of surveillance technology to ensure it complies with human rights law. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The top U.S. infectious diseases expert, Anthony Fauci, testified to the U.S. Senate on Tuesday that the Delta variant of the coronavirus is the cause of more than 80% of new U.S. COVID-19 cases. He said, however, the authorized vaccines remain more than 90% effective in preventing hospitalizations and deaths. This report is produced by Freddie Joyner of Reuters.
The fast-spreading Delta variant now accounts for more than 80% of new COVID-19 cases. This is according to top U.S. infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci, who spoke on Capitol Hill Tuesday during a Senate hearing. COVID cases are sharply higher across the country, and deaths are rising too, up nearly 48% from the previous week. But Fauci said so far, vaccines are holding up against the threat.
The fact is that, however, and the importance of vaccination, is that our vaccines that we're using in this country are very effective against this variant, particularly, I point out, to the situation regarding advanced disease leading to hospitalizations and deaths, where it's still well in the 90% of effectiveness.
But millions of Americans are still not vaccinated, causing alarm among U.S. health officials, who are urging Americans to get their shots. A message shared Tuesday by Republican Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina.
COVID won't just go away. We need all Americans who can get the vaccine to get the vaccine. If you won't do it for yourself, do it for your friends, your families, for your neighbors, and your local community. Not only is the Delta variant a concern, but we need to look around the corner to the next mutation of the disease.
One heated moment in the hearing, a pointed exchange between Republican Senator Rand Paul and Fauci, in which Senator Paul accused the infectious disease expert of lying about the National Institute of Health providing funding for research at China's Wuhan Institute of Virology. The senator from Kentucky, who has sparred with Fauci during several pandemic-related hearings, alleged that the research may have played a role in developing the novel coronavirus at the Wuhan lab.
As you are aware, it is a crime to lie to Congress. Section 1001 of the U.S. Criminal Code creates a felony and a 5-year penalty for lying to Congress.
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. You do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly, and I want to say that officially. You are implying that what we did was responsible for the deaths of individuals. I totally resent
that. It could
have been. And if anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
The origin of the novel coronavirus has become a heated partisan issue in the United States, with Republicans urging further inquiries into whether it leaked from a lab. President Biden in May called on aides to investigate the origins of the virus and to report back to him within 90 days.
That's Freddie Joyner of Reuters. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.